We are talking to Dave Simons, who is a partner and managing director of One Private Wealth. Dave, good to have you with us. How are you?
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here as always. Hello, John.
Hey, buddy. Always love this segment every week.
Yeah, love talking to you. I have no idea what you're going to be watching tonight. Maybe a rerun or something. I can't imagine.
Oh, Billikens basketball, buddy. Billikens and Dayton. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I totally forgot about that. That's much more enjoyable than a certain show on tonight. Yes.
So let's talk about that State of the Union, because I did want to ask you about the tariffs, which some are apparently going into place on imports. And this was even after the Supreme Court struck down, you know, his unilateral tariffs. And I think there's so much confusion here because people don't know what this means. Is he still trying to implement them, even though the Supreme Court said he can't? So with that confusion comes uncertainty. And with that, it messes with the markets. So where do we stand today?
Yeah, Chris, you actually nailed the word, and that is uncertainty. Wall Street hates uncertainty. It typically sells first, asks questions later until it can eliminate some of that uncertainty. It's the old cliche of the devil you know versus the devil you don't. And the market spent all of last year in 2025 trying to figure out what the tariffs were going to do, what industries were going to get hit, what countries will be affected. Oh, this industry is getting a certain carve out. Oh, that company has got a little special tariff just for them. And after a while, the market kind of settled in and go, okay, we may not like this. It's a little chaotic, but at least we sort of have a game plan. Well, the Supreme Court decision, which was not a surprise at all to Wall Street, really throws that all out the window. It's like, okay, man, here we go again. And it's more confusing than ever. So no real surprise. The market has sold off a little bit. I'm not bearish. I don't think that one decision is going to cause any real damage to the market. In fact, it's nicely up today. But it does bring on some uncertainty. And I don't think you can get a resumption of the bull market until we get more clarity.
Yeah. And, you know, the president has now chosen a different statute under which to impose sweeping tariffs. And yep. You know, that's going to be, you know, adjudicated, although this one has some kind of a fairly short window of effectiveness, right? Am I reading that right?
Yep. Section 122 of an old trade act in 1974 that has not been enacted in decades. I mean, I guess they took the cobwebs out, and I think they knew, the Trump administration knew, that the decision was probably going to go against them because, man, they just brought all of this out immediately. And that Section 122 says that a president can impose tariffs of up to 10% across the board. And the quote is this: to deal with large and serious United States balance of payment deficits. Very antiquated. That was back when we were still on the gold standard. So he's got 150 days to figure this out. And they're throwing out all of these other sections, 201, 301, 232. And that's why the market is just like, we don't know what this is going to do. And by the way, on the tariffs that have been really rendered null and void in the past, all these companies now are wondering, should we sue the government? Should we try to get this money back? We're already seeing that. How about us as consumers? All studies have shown that
we've paid
some of this. Mm-hmm. Do we all get a check for a couple grand in the mail? I mean, it's probably not, but it just belies the point again about the chaos that has ensued because of this. Things will settle down, but until then, expect more volatility.
You mentioned balance of payments. That's essentially the difference between what we import versus what we export to other countries. Economists generally, I think, believe that that's not really that important of a figure. Is that right?
John, thank you for asking that question, because I was just talking to somebody else about that this morning. Every white paper that's been written, every study that has been conducted on this comes to the same conclusion. When you are king of the land economically around the world, which we have been post-World War II, you are typically going to run a deficit. And that has only increased as the global economy has become more flatlined. We have, Americans do, this insatiable appetite to consume. And that is what has driven this economy for decades. It's what's actually, frankly, driven the global economy for decades. Well, we as a country cannot It's impossible to produce everything that we want to buy. So all this talk about, well, then let's pull all the manufacturing back here. Okay, sounds great in theory, but expect prices to be paid to double and triple and quadruple because we're going to pay them American wages as opposed to a lot of these foreign countries. So you cannot have your cake and eat it too. Running deficits is actually a sign of strength in this global economy. So I don't fully understand this desire to try to even the playing field. I get it if you feel that a country is taking advantage of it. So you can piecemeal this. And that's why I think the market was expecting that a year ago. But this across the board, everybody gets 10 to 15%, to me is not workable, and it's unnecessary.
Is it possible? Okay, so let's talk about what is a, I guess, an acceptable level of deficit. Because if you have too much of it, right, then you're talking about a real issue. But is there an acceptable level that we want to be at? And can you know what that is? You know what I mean? Like, there's not a number, right?
Yeah, Chris, I think, if I remember right, the historical average in this country is a deficit that's about 70 or 80% of GDP. Japan has run a deficit for years of over 200% GDP, their deficit. And that's why that economy has flatlined for over 30 years. It's only now starting to improve because they're attacking it. So yeah, we are slightly over 100%, that's historically high. It has not mattered yet, but it will at some point because I've said this before, the bond vigilantes, man, that is the most powerful group in finance anywhere in the world. And people who buy our bonds around the world, all institutions, individuals, pension plans, if they decide that our deficit is too high and it can prove to be inflationary and hurt the dollar, they will start selling our bonds. What is that tipping point? I don't know. Is it 120% GDP? Is it 150? It's out there, and we are incrementally still moving in that direction. I have longer-term concerns, nothing today yet.
Yeah, and you look at the national debt and financing our national debt, which is now 30-whatever trillion.
Approaching 40 now. Yeah. We're right on the edge of 40 trillion.
And our countries, at some point, do folks stop financing our debt? And then what do we do?
That's exactly right. That's my concern. If you have, well, you had, what was it, a couple of months ago when Sweden decided, hey, we don't want to own U.S. debt anymore. We don't really like what's happening politically. We don't like all this talk about coming into one of our neighbors and taking over Greenland. We don't really know if we can trust what the U.S. is doing. I'm not making a personal political statement. I'm just rehashing what Sweden has said, and they don't want to be part of this. So they have ordered their government pension plans to sell their U.S. treasuries because they don't know if the dollar is going to stay strengthened through all of this. So it is a problem longer term. I've been really amazed at how well it has held up. The dollar has weakened a little bit. It was overvalued, in my opinion, so I welcome this. But if it continues to weaken against other currencies, then you could have some issues. You could have an inflationary problem. And therein lies, guys, why gold is back to hitting all-time records. More investors are, including big governments around the world, who feel, I don't know if we can count on the U.S. having the big dollar anymore to kind of support the global economy. So we're going to start hedging, and we're going to be buying more gold, silver, and other commodities.
So Meta has a new deal for GPUs, for artificial intelligence. What does that mean for AI stocks?
Oh, my goodness. AI stocks have actually been, believe it or not, this is not getting as much headlines as I thought. But if you go back a year when AI stocks were peaking, about April, somewhere in there of a year ago, they've actually been underperforming the rest of the market. It's interesting what analysts are calling this. The real economy is back. What does that mean? It's the old-fashioned economy. You're seeing industrial companies, you're seeing retailers, you're seeing certain selected healthcare stocks. Even some of the old line tech stocks have done a little bit better. The AI stocks like Nvidia, like Broadcom and others, Microsoft, are all down. And in some cases, double digits. And I think what it is because people are finally getting concerned about all the spending, hundreds of billions of dollars, Meta being one of them. and to try to make sure that they are in front of the race, the AI race, as they build out the thumbprint, all the data centers that are being built. And now investors, especially the big institutional guys, are going, okay, when are you going to be done spending all your profit and actually show some return on AI? Because it hasn't happened. So I think longer term on that, Chris, AI stocks, yes, you got to have some exposure there depending on your risk tolerance. But here in the near term, I suspect that the old economy stocks will continue to outperform.
Looking at the global economy and foreign stock markets, are we seeing any trends globally about where the economy's heading?
Absolutely, 100%. So starting about a year ago on that, John, international and foreign stocks, as on average, have outperformed U.S. stocks. We've been waiting for that for, honestly, about 15 years. We get little stops and starts. International will do a little bit better for 6 months, 9 months, and then the U.S. takes over. And for obvious reasons, this has been going on since the end of the Great Recession 15, 16 years ago. But international stocks got so cheap. And sort of a side domino that has come from the way Trump has managed kind of some of the global relations is that these foreign companies now are spending more money internally, especially on defense, on their defense, because Trump, and I agree with him on this, he'll look to a lot of these NATO countries and say, look, guys, we kind of fund most of this. And I think you're just sort of getting a little bit of a free ride here because you know that the U.S. is going to come to your defense and they'll finance it too. Well, I'm sorry, those freebie days are over. And so a lot of these European countries are saying, oh, geez, okay, we better increase our own defense and reach deals with other countries. That may hurt us longer term here in the U.S., but if you're an investor, and that's what I always like to get back down to, and you have not increased your international stock exposure, now it's not too late. We think this thing has legs. We have been increasing our international exposure in our model since last year and continue to do so.
So Bitcoin is on the verge of some sort of, I don't know, I've seen people call it a collapse, but there's a little bit less confidence in it at the moment. It's just that it's a very volatile thing to get into, and I still don't quite understand the appeal of it. And I feel like a lot of people are probably setting themselves up for massive disappointment down the road. But where do you stand on it?
Chris, I've never really been able to get my arms around the concept of Bitcoin. I get it with blockchain technology, but everything that the Bitcoin bulls tried to sell us on in the early days has turned out not to be true. Well, it's going to be a hedge against inflation. Nope, it didn't do that. Well, it's going to be an alternative to gold. Nope, hasn't held up with that. It basically trades like a high-flying tech stock. And it could it be 200,000 someday? Okay, sure. Could it go to 10,000? Mm-hmm, yeah, sure. I mean, so you can tell I'm pretty agnostic on it. We do not own any Bitcoin in any of our portfolios. And any clients who have expressed interest, I just politely say, if you want to do that on your own, but we just feel that there are let's just be serious investors here. If anyone wants to play on it, I have no problem with it. But I tell them it's just kind of gambling. And my viewpoint has been proven accurate once again as this thing has been cut in half.
Dave Simons, always appreciate our conversations. We'll talk again next week.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, John. Take care, guys.
Yep. He's awesome.
Dave is great, and he's the partner and managing director of One Private Wealth with us every Tuesday on KMOX.